the girl's biological mother, who lost custody of the children in 2017.
This is Arabella. This is my least favorite picture of her because of how skinny she is in this photo. And I held it up so they can see, so Letitia and her mother can stare at what they did.
Welcome or welcome back. I'm Cassie and this is a Wicked World. The story I have for you today is about four adults who teamed up against three little girls whom they had previously put in great efforts to adopt. These adults were so horrific to these girls that one would end up dying and the other two were just days away from death. This is the story of Arabella McCormick. Arabella McCormick was born on July 21st, 2011, to her biological mother, Toriana Flory, and her biological father, Chelsea Sambrano, in San Diego County, California. Arabella was said to be a loving and affectionate little girl who loved princesses, Minnie Mouse, the movie Frozen, and, of course, her little sisters. Now, a married couple named Letitia and Brian McCormick became foster parents to Arabella as well as her two younger sisters in 2017, and the couple would end up adopting them a year and a half later in 2019. Letitia and her husband Brian, who were both in their mid-40s, lived in Spring Valley, California. Letitia worked at Rock Church in San Diego as a ministry leadership coordinator, and she had been working there since 2013. Brian had worked as a U.S. Customs and Border Patrol agent for the last 19 years. Letitia's mother and father, Stanley and Adela Tom, also lived with the couple in their large Southern California home. Now, Stanley and Adela Tom had previously volunteered at the San Diego Police Department as members of the Retired Senior Volunteer Patrol Program. Volunteers in this program will normally check on houses when owners are away and or check on elderly residents in the area. So Arabella and her sisters had been removed from their parents, Toriana and Chelsea's home in 2013. As the parents' relationship was tumultuous, this led to the girls being regularly exposed to domestic violence. After Arabella and her sisters were taken away, Toriana and Chelsea were still allowed to have visits with them every week. Though, after they were officially adopted, this would come to an end and they hadn't seen them since. When they had been allowed to see their daughters, Toriana and Chelsea would meet with them at the Rock Church campus in Point Loma, San Diego, California, where the girls' new mother, Letitia, worked. Now, the thing is, the girl's biological father, Chelsea, is an Indigenous American. So when the McCormacks had adopted the three girls, it was in direct violation of the Indian Child Welfare Act, which is a federal law which prevents the unnecessary removal of Indigenous children from their homes. In the early hours of August 30th, 2022, around 2 a.m., the McCormacks would call 911. They reported that Arabella was not breathing, and they claimed that she had choked on chicken broth. First responders arrived at the family's home, located on the 3300 block of Lakeview Avenue, and they found Arabella lying on the floor with no pulse. A deputy on the scene reported that the little girl looked like a corpse with skin stretched over her. She was rushed to a nearby hospital, but her heart failed, and Arabella was declared dead less than 10 hours after she had arrived. On August 30th, 2022, there was bruising and lacerations found all over Arabella's body, and her bones were protruding from her skin. She weighed only 48 pounds at the time of her death. The average weight for a girl her age, 11 years old, is 70 to 100 pounds. That is a huge difference. Arabella also had a swollen hand and had suffered 15 different bone fractures, most of which were still in the process of healing at that time. Some of these breaks were as new as only 10 days old. Arabella had been beaten, starved, and abused to death. Arabella's sisters had undergone the same torture that she had, and when they were brought to the hospital, they were on the verge of death. Both sisters were severely malnourished and bruised. At the hospital, they had been put into intensive care as they had been suffering from refeeding syndrome, which is an electrolyte imbalance that occurs when feeding is reinstated after severe malnutrition. And the two sisters would end up spending 3 weeks in the hospital before they were well enough to go off to a new foster home together. Now, when investigators had returned to Arabella's home to question her parents, they had found Brian, the adoptive father, sitting in his pickup truck in the driveway. As police officers approached his vehicle, Brian took out his service weapon, put it to his head, and then pulled the trigger because he's a coward and he couldn't face the consequences of his terrible actions. Authorities would arrest the other three family members who lived in the home in connection with Arabella's death, as well as the mistreatment of her two sisters. The police had apprehended Arabella's adoptive mother, Letitia, and the child's grandparents, 75-year-old Stanley Tom and 70-year-old Adela Tom. Letitia and her father, Stanley, were charged with murder, child abuse and torture, and conspiracy to commit child torture. Adela received the same charges, minus the charge of murder. Letitia was also charged at that time with torture and willful cruelty relating to her other two daughters, who were 6 and 7 at the time. Now, 70-year-old Adela did not face the charge of murder because she had fallen ill in the last few weeks of Arabella's life. So because of her illness, Adela had not been around the little girl during those weeks. All three suspects pled not guilty. During their bail hearing, Letitia's defense attorney asked that her bail be set to $1 million. And Adela's defense attorney asked that she be held on only a $100,000 bail. They argued that their clients posed no threat to society and had no prior criminal history. The judge denied this, however, and held them without bail. The judge believed that they were indeed a threat to the public, especially Arabella's two surviving sisters. So Child Welfare Services had been called a number of times prior to Arabella's death, but you guessed it, nothing had been done. Back in 2018, a year before the adoption of Arabella and her sisters was even finalized, someone at Arabella's school had called Child Welfare Services to report that they suspected child abuse. At the time, Arabella was just 7 years old. During the investigation, two workers at Highlands Elementary School shared concerns about unusual rules and controlling behavior by the McCormicks. These concerned school employees said that the McCormicks would regularly restrict Arabella's food and water intake, limiting her to only one Dixie cup of water a day. They also wanted Arabella to only be permitted to use the bathroom twice while she was at school during the day. At home, she wasn't allowed to use it at all. The couple also asked teachers that Arabella not use scissors, citing fears of self-harm, though nobody at the school had ever witnessed any behavior even close to this. Brian and Letitia also did not want their adopted daughter to use markers at school, and they didn't want her to get any type of reward at school, such as being the line leader. The evil pair even required daily reports about Arabella's behavior. In addition, one school employee said that Arabella had told her that she only slept on the floor with a pillow, no blankets, no sheets, on a hard floor. But it was okay because she said it didn't hurt much. At one point, Arabella had spoken to a school worker about the movie Annie, and she told her that she is not like Annie because when Annie was adopted, all of her hurt went away, but she was still hurting. That is so incredibly sad. And that was also reported to Child Services, yet she still remained in the home. It's believed that the abuse of all three sisters had started back as early as February of 2018 and then continued until the day Arabella had died. So after Arabella's school had called Child Welfare Services back in 2018, a social worker made two surprise house calls to the McCormick's home, but nobody answered the door. So instead, the social worker would call Letitia and plan a visit over the phone. This visit would not end up taking place until about a month after the original complaint had been made. During this meeting, Letitia, Brian, and Arabella all denied that there was any abuse going on in the home. So the social worker just took them at their word, didn't think anything of interviewing Arabella in a different room, maybe. The case was then closed as unfounded. While Arabella's assigned caseworker did visit her at school, he did not ask about all the concerns that had been reported, only about her sleeping arrangements, to which Arabella told him she was sleeping on the floor because she had been disrespectful. And when Letitia spoke with social workers, she said that she had only been limiting Arabella's food because she had been having some medical problems and had been having stomach issues lately, though the social worker never reached out to her doctor or any other medical professionals to confirm this. The fact that Letitia and Brian did not even want Arabella to be rewarded while she was at school by being, like, line leader? Should have been a red flag right there. Why would they not want to reward their child for doing something good? No parent would want that, except for a crappy parent. Less than a month after the investigation into abuse had been closed, again, somebody at Arabella's school would call social services. It was reported that Brian, who had picked up 7-year-old Arabella from an after-school program, had pinned her down and tried to see if she had any candy in her pockets. Arabella was screaming bloody murder, and when asked by school staff to leave, Brian dragged his daughter to the car. The little girl later told school workers that once she had gotten home, her parents had stripped her of her pants and then poured cold water over her head. After this, a social worker would again try to make a surprise house call to the McCormicks' home. But once again, nobody would answer the door, even though this time there were cars in the driveway. So the social worker set up another planned meeting, which took place about a week later, and she would interview Arabella in the living room while her parents were standing right in the kitchen and could hear everything she was saying. So, of course, the little girl told the social worker that everything was fine. Letitia had told the investigator that Arabella was not allowed to have sugar because it made it hard for her to calm down. She also said that Arabella was having dental problems and noted her past stomach problems. Then she told the social worker that Arabella had ADHD, PTSD, and oppositional defiant disorder. Letitia said she had only ran the cold water over her head because she had heard that it would help her when she was raging. So the caseworker, again, ruled this report as unfounded. And now that the school had again reported the McCormicks to social services, at this time, Brian and Letitia told the caseworker that they would be pulling Arabella out of school and homeschooling her. Now, since she was still just a foster child at that point, that should not have been allowed, but for some reason, it was. Arabella's biological parents had also reported suspected child abuse to child welfare officers over 30 times prior to Arabella's death, but all the allegations that they had made against the McCormicks were either denied or ignored. In fact, during their visits with their daughters, Chelsea and Toriana had noticed signs of abuse on their girls very shortly after they had been placed in the McCormicks' home. In addition to social services, they had also reported their concerns to the Rock Church, where Letitia worked. But they also did not take the report seriously, saying that abuse did not happen in the home of an ordained minister and a Border Patrol agent. Letitia was also said to have brought the girls into work almost every day. So somebody had to have noticed something. There are thousands of members that attend that church. Recent photos of the three girls that Toriana had seen showed them looking emaciated, and they had bruises and scabs all over their bodies. Toriana said she also noticed broken teeth as well as signs of broken bones in her daughters. And their father, Chelsea, would say that sometimes during their meetings, he would try to hug the girls and they would recoil like they were in pain. He also added that the girls were constantly hungry, so he would bring extra food to these visitations. Toriana also reported the same thing that Chelsea had, that the girls would pull away as if in pain when they were touched. When Toriana had asked Arabella why she hurt, she told her that Mama Letitia told her she could not say. Toriana had then confronted Letitia about this, and Letitia told her that Arabella was just being dramatic. During the authorities' investigation, they found text messages, videos, photos, and they also obtained witness statements that would all reveal that the girls' parents and grandparents had teamed up to starve the three little girls. Several times during the day that Arabella had died, Brian had communicated with his wife via text message saying that Arabella was starving to death and he believed that she was going to die. But he didn't do anything. He just told Letitia about it, who he also knew was going to do nothing. In another message from Brian to Letitia, talking about one of the girls sitting in their own waste, he said, "She can soak in that shit and get sick. Bella will be done soon, and we will only have two to worry about." So they knew that she was going to die. In addition to all the other horrific treatment, Arabella and her two sisters had also been hit with sticks, paddles, and been isolated to their rooms at the McCormicks' home. Sometimes Arabella would be punished for the simplest of things, like how she ate her cereal. Yeah. Instead of a heaping spoon, it always had to be level or just below level. In addition, she had also not received any medical treatment in the 4 years prior to her death. It is alleged that Letitia, Brian, Stanley, and Adela worked together as a team to carry out over 700 acts of abuse that led to Arabella's death. Letitia was believed to be the ringleader of the group, while Brian and the grandparents would be the ones to starve the girls, as well as hit them with sticks and paddles. Police also found some text messages that Adela had sent to Brian in the days leading up to Arabella's death, even though she was sick in bed herself. In one instance, which happened 5 days before Arabella's death, Adela had found out that the little girl was lying in bed with a bloody nose. Adela then texted Letitia saying that Arabella should just be left there to bleed because she only wanted attention. A recording was also found of Adela and Stanley forcing Arabella to work out. In the audio, Arabella can be heard crying while Adela mocks her and tells her that she will not get any food until she's finished with her exercising. And in the weeks leading up to her death, Arabella had been forced to exercise while wearing wet clothes and trash bags. And on at least one occasion, Arabella had been punched in the face by Adela. After being denied bail twice previously, in March of 2023, Adela was granted bail. A judge would grant this due to her age and medical issues, and she is allowed to stay in San Bernardino County on an ankle monitor up until her trial. A lawsuit was also filed against San Diego County, the San Diego Rock Church, Pacific Coast Academy, and Letitia. It was filed by the guardian of Arabella and her two sisters' estate. In the lawsuit, the girl's attorney outlines what were repeated failures on the parts of numerous people who were mandated reporters and were responsible for alerting law enforcement of any abuse or mistreatment. The lawsuit also alleged that one of Letitia's co-workers had come to the home at one point and she had seen the girls. She later called them little ghosts. That's how thin and pale they were. At one point, Letitia had also told her prayer group that Arabella had bad behaviors, so due to that, they could not have people over anymore. And there was spiritual welfare and demonic activity happening with Arabella, she also said. But not a single church member, as I said earlier, reported any of this behavior. And members of the Rock Church were not the only ones who were aware of the girl's dire situation in the McCormick's home. The Rock Church's child abuse investigator, who is also a San Diego firefighter and a minister at the Rock Church, was also named in the lawsuit. It was alleged that he had visited the girls on a number of occasions, the last time being 1 week before Arabella's death. At the weight that she was at, how could he not have done anything? At the time of this visit, all three girls had to have been severely emaciated, underdeveloped, and the victims of prolonged starvation. They had also been isolated, did not have any medical attention, and were being abused and tortured at that point. But a firefighter slash minister slash child abuse investigator didn't do anything. If he's not going to do anything, who will? Letitia, Stanley, and Adela had all volunteered at the San Diego Police Department, and Letitia had worked alongside an officer who had visited the family's home. He had witnessed that Brian and Letitia would often prohibit the girls from eating food, and when they were allowed to eat food, they would force them to chew as slow as possible. But that was not all. This same police officer had provided a wooden paddle to the adoptive parents to hit the girls with. Then, when the first wooden paddle broke, unbelievably, he provided them with two more paddles to, again, hit the girls with. He should be punished, not just sued. That's beyond words. The lawsuit also alleges that the girls were enrolled in Pacific Coast Academy's homeschooling program, where the teachers would see the girls at least every 20 days. And these two teachers had also reported nothing. And they were mandated reporters as well. Arabella's biological mother says that she is now trying to get her other two daughters back home with her. Well, thank you for listening to all of Arabella's story today. These four monsters must have only adopted these three little girls for the government checks each month. Otherwise, why? They were just so vile to them, and so many people, including possibly hundreds at the church, saw these girls looking the way they were and did nothing. Child Protective Services, though, ultimately should have been the one to step up and fix the situation, because they had been the ones to put Arabella and her two sisters into the McCormick's home and let them be adopted by them after there had already been multiple DCF reports filed. So if you do like true crime and you want to hear it from me, then don't forget to hit that subscribe button below and turn on your notifications too, so you'll know when I upload a new video, which is 2 to 3 times every week. Thanks for watching A Wicked World today. Until next time, take care, guys. Bye. Thank you for being patrons of A Wicked World. Adina, Alana, Allie, Amanda, Amber Lee, Amy, Angela, Angie, Brandy, Brother Mike, Carrie, Catherine, Cecilia, Celia Cruz, Shantae, Claire, Danielle, Danny J, Drew, Emily, Eric, Frank, Georgia, Haley, Hannah Rama, Hannah, Jackie, Jen, Jennifer, Jerrica, Josie, Kara, Christy, Kristen, Lori, Lindsay, London, Mandy, Marion, Mary, Mel, Melissa, Mimi, MJ Kelly, Neoma, Nikki, Owen, Ray, Robin, Sharon, Starlet Sky, Stephanie O, Stephanie T, Susan, Suzanne, Tamara, Tammy B, Tammy S, The Huntsman, Tracy UK, Wesley, and Whisper 216. You guys rock. Now, there's even more of A Wicked World on Patreon. So check it out at patreon.com/awickedworld or use the Patreon app. You'll have access to exclusive videos each month and more. Any support truly helps to make sure the victims never get forgotten and to highlight the shortcomings of society associated with each case. Do you have a suggestion for a case you'd like to see me cover? If so, send me an email at awickedworldtruecrime@gmail.com.